Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, hello and welcome to our weekly broadcast of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. As a reminder, the first 3 months of 2013, we are discussing one by one what I like to refer to as the six R's of midlife renewal. We kick the year off, obviously, with the subject of resolutions, which everyone seems to kick the new year off with. And then for the past three programs, we've been talking about retirement, how to finance and plan out a long and joyful concluding chapter. The time to plan out retirement is now, well before your last day on the job. That's why we do it on a program about middle age. Over the next four programs, we're going to talk about the third R of midlife renewal, recharging your workplace, the place where you go to earn a living. And in this era of the internet and home-based businesses, this may be your basement or your kitchen table. Doesn't really matter where it is. The key is, are you inspired in your daily work life? And we're going to break the subject into two pieces. Later this month, we'll talk to those who report to a boss. We'll talk about recharging your career right where you are, or of finding a new job where someone will pay you to have a good time. But this week and next, I want to speak to you as leaders, formal or informal, in the world of commerce. Small business owners, executives from large corporations, or for that matter, executives from government organizations or nonprofits, department managers and supervisors, and men and women of middle age who do not have a formal leadership title, but who are well respected and lead by example. And I'm sure we probably included just about everyone who's listening in today. And we'll keep coming back during this discussion to a consistent theme. No matter how good or the product or service that you sell or provide, to truly recharge your business in the new year, you will need to make your employees at all levels your number one priority. If they aren't happy, your enterprise bottom line won't be happy. When it comes down to it, your most important business asset is the combined talent and creativity of your onboard participants, top to bottom, bottom to top. As we approach the subject of leadership to recharge your enterprise in 2013, let me introduce my second book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. And despite the title, this is not a book about sailing on the high seas. It is for you as a captain of commerce, a leader of men and women in your enterprise. As the subtitle states, it's about recreating and re-energizing lagging enterprises and participants midstream. It's all about effective leadership by making your employees your number one priority. And I don't mean to imply by this that they shouldn't be held accountable or not given effective direction and inspiration, and their results should not be monitored, but you want to make sure that they're inspired to accomplish shared corporate objectives. My book takes you on a journey through all phases of recovery and employee inspiration, concentrating on seasoned midlife, mid-career employees who are the heart and soul of most organizations. I begin by helping identify employee early warning signs, signs of organization fatigue, signs that can tell you that your business is beginning to lose momentum. I guide you through a current inventory of company strengths and weaknesses and how and why your enterprise may be less effective today than in what I call your golden era. I then instruct you as a leader on how to send employees on sponsored mental vacations and sabbaticals for those stalled, displaced, or passed over. And then I talk about employer-employee compacts, so that individual career goals and aspirations tie into the collective excellence. Finally, I move on to propose broad dispersion of decision rights to frontline employees in what I call an in-command but out-of-control workplace environment, much like a beehive or an ant colony. And please believe me, I'm not trying to imply your employees are a bunch of ants. In the end, it all comes down to mutual respect and trust between leadership and employees, a coming together of narrow and broad circles of cooperation among men and women at all levels in every department, cooperation throughout and beyond your business to encompass suppliers, distribution network, even customers. Colleagues truly committed to grow and develop with your enterprise to develop the business together, and individuals whose personal career aspirations are in sync with your corporate-wide strategic objectives. To preview my second book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew, please visit our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And remember, I'm also available as a coach, inspirational speaker to your company, or a consultant, and you can contact me also through my website. And we'll even give you a free gift just to show up. Now let's move on to today's featured guest, who will inspire you to engage your employees without disruption and alienation. Well, as we launch this segment on employee engagement and why it's so important in recharging your business this year, let me tell you a couple of stories. The first story, a couple of years ago, my wife Glory and I were talking about downsizing from a large home to a townhouse. We had no immediate plans, but definite potential interest. Several times we have driven by an attractive development which was going up near us of townhouses about 1 mile away, and there were prominent signs outside pointing out attractive features inside. And one Sunday around 4:50 p.m., we were driving by and noticed a sign that said model open till 5, and Gloria said, let's check it out. And the realtor on the site as we walked into the model did not rise to greet us and did not even smile. Her only comment was, well, our model closes in 5 minutes, so please hurry. She did not accompany us on a tour of the inside, didn't offer to answer any questions, and got up only to remind us precisely at 5 that she was closing. Here's a question. If and when Gloria and I decide to downsize, will we be motivated to consider this development? That, to me, is a classic example of disconnect between employee priorities and customer expectations.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if the on-site agent would have shared in sales commission, and as a customer, I couldn't care less, but her obvious life priority was to get home and spend some evening with her family. And also, it was an obvious disconnect between employer and employee, because even if we weren't serious right then, we might be in a year or two, and we might have friends who were. To this day, whenever I hear that developer's name is mentioned on TV or a drive-by, I always recall that incident, and I've told a few friends about it. Today, we'll talk about how to avoid similar disconnect in your business. Just quickly, a second story. My first job out of graduate school, I was in the finance department of a large manufacturing company, and the economy wasn't so great back then, and our department staffing had been cut back, and we were asked to do more. And we were supposed to be inspired by the speech from our CEO on company closed-circuit TV, in these tough times, every one of us needs to go that extra mile, and you will be richly rewarded once things turn around. The problem was, after the speech, we as employees were given little, if any, discretion or creativity or any real incentives to excel.
And
our bosses couldn't seem to care less about our personal lives. It was all about work. And a classic example, more than a few times without warning, around 4:45, along with our manager, we were called into the big boss's office, the division EPP Finance, who then handed out an emergency assignment, which must be completed by 9 a.m. tomorrow. And this is a kicker. He might explain it a bit, but as 5 p.m. came, the EVP without fail put on his coat and jacket and left right on time. And his supposed rationale, well, in his prior life as a financial analyst, he had to work long hours, so now he'd earned the privilege of going home early and leaving all the junk to us. Do you think my colleagues and I were inspired to be creative in completing these emergency assignments? It could help to explain why a few months later I began looking for a new job. Now, my story is from years ago, but highly relevant to present times. And as today's guest will affirm, a lot of business leaders today are asking their experienced mid-career employees to go that extra mile and to do more with less just to keep their jobs. And I love the way he redefines the common baby boomer theme, 50 is the new 40 on his website. It now means you're expected to work 50 hours a week for 40 hours of pay. We're here to discuss why this stick without the carrot approach will not recharge your business this year or any year. And our guest is Les Landis, founder and president of Landis & Associates, a noted business consultant, and he's also author of the new book, Getting to the Heart of Employee Empowerment.
Employee engagement.
Mm-hmm. Employee engagement, I'm sorry. Right. The power and purpose of imagination and free will in the workplace. Sorry, I got the name wrong. And Les is here to inspire you as a leader, formal and informal, to transform your business into a place where employees of all ages are tuned in, turned on, and eager to go the extra mile on their own terms. And in the process, he may challenge some of your popular beliefs about employee motivation. Hello, Les, and welcome to our program.
Wow, you just took my breath away, Roy, with a preamble like that. I'm not sure what more I can add.
Well, you can add the positive side of it because those were both negative examples of what's wrong so much with the companies today.
Yeah, you know, the story you told about your real estate agent, and you said that she wanted to get home to her family. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know what, we all do. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But the question is, how do we make sure that the time that we are spending on the job is something that isn't soul-killing and that really gives us an opportunity to thrive and contribute the very best that all of us are capable and, for the most part, willing to contribute if the conditions and the situations are right.
Yes, and an extra 5 or 10 minutes talking to us and being gracious to us really set her back that much.
Yep. And the reason people get caught in that kind of thing first of all, let's just back up and talk about what do we mean by employee engagement. Okay,
yeah, that's kind of my first question.
Yeah. So, you know, we actually use definition that was developed by the conference board some years ago, and I like it quite a bit. It's a heightened emotional connection that employees feel for their organization that influences them to exert greater discretionary effort to their work.
Yeah, and hopefully it's a heightened positive.
Exactly. Those two phrases, emotional connection and discretionary effort, and that's greater positive discretionary effort to their work. And so if you really don't establish the systems, policies, and processes that help to foster that emotional connection, you're going to get the kind of disconnect that you experienced with that woman who was your real estate agent and with the company that was trying to get you to go the extra mile. And so that really is an area that I and a lot of other folks have been working in for several years. And I decided, you know, we need to step back and take a look at a little bit of what I call the why before the how.
Yeah.
Which is why I decided to write this book, which is actually a business fable, which is much more fun to read and interesting to read than your typical business text. And it's got some interesting characters in there. A guy who's the he's a VP in HR and corporate communications, and he kind of runs into this mysterious character. And then Barney the Purple Dinosaur shows up, and Henry David Thoreau shows up. And so it's kind of a fun story. But that doesn't diminish the seriousness of this particular issue called employee engagement. And, you know, if you look at it, you know, why is it so important? I don't know if you've looked at any of the data from organizations that conduct surveys on employee engagement. Gallup,
as a matter of fact, I quoted similar statistics in my book, which I can't say statistics very well. But
the Gallup poll, pretty consistently says that only about 30% of employees are fully engaged, and that actively disengaged workers are costing U.S. companies more than $300 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars per year. So there's a real bottom line impact from low levels of employee engagement.
Yeah. Well, in your book, you talk about the essential difference between humans and other living creatures, and that was really, really shocking. I thought, it was one of those aha moments. I knew that. Why didn't I think of that? But tell us what this difference is and why you should keep this difference in mind when you're trying to lead your employees to
absolutely. So, the subtitle gives you a pretty good clue, right?
Yeah.
But let me play with you a little bit on those ideas. Kind of like what I do in my workshop. So finish this sentence for me. It's an old adage, free as a...
I assume bird.
Right.
But I
you
see
got
it a little because I listen to your...
not many people get that wrong. So the question is, what are birds free to do?
I don't know. Dump on my car's windshield, I guess.
Now, you know what? You just stole my thunder because I tell folks, you know what? Birds aren't free to do anything.
No,
they are programmed to do what they do. They are programmed to fly. They are programmed to eat. They are programmed to make baby birds and build nests. And, of course, yes, they are programmed to crap all over your car just after you got done washing it. But human beings have this thing called free will.
Yeah.
It allows us to make choices. Unlike all other living creatures on the planet, it allows us to make choices that don't necessarily follow this inherent program that drives the behavior of every other living creature. And that capacity to make choice is so driven and so embedded in the fiber of our being that if we don't have workplaces that allow us to exercise that choice, we're cutting the heart out of what we are as human beings. Now, let me go to the next thing, because this is equally important.
Yeah.
The second thing that people are uniquely able to do, human beings are uniquely able to do, is to imagine, to be able to imagine things that do not exist, and then to actually, through our ability to make choices, to create those things.
Yes, we actually had an earlier program all about imagine like a child, and that's one of the clear ways to midlife renewal.
Absolutely.
But if you aren't permitted to do that at your work, obviously that takes a big piece out of the fun of living or the adventure of living.
There are a lot of folks who will argue, here are some other things that are different, right? We're intelligent and animals aren't. Well, you know what? I defy you to get into an argument with an animal lover about that. Even if you say, well, here's another thing that's different about people. We've got souls. Animals don't have souls. Well, you know what? Disney has dispelled that, right? All dogs go to heaven.
Yeah.
So we know that ain't true. So here's the thing that's really fascinating, Roy. When I was working on this thing and I came to the conclusion, that these two things, imagination and free will, really are the differentiating characteristics between human beings and other living creatures. I'm not kidding you. Somebody took over my hands because I've been thinking about those two things for a long time, but here's something that came out on my keyboard, on my screen, I'd never thought of before. And that is one without the other is useless.
Yeah.
That imagination without free will has no power. And free will without imagination has no purpose.
Yeah, and you get extremely frustrated if you have one and not the other.
Absolutely. So you bring these two things together, and you understand. You got to understand that those are the things that make us uniquely human. And we have to create systems, policies, processes in our organizations if we want to get the very best of what human beings are capable of doing through our imagination and free will. We've got to make sure that we design every system, policy, and process and decision around those, that
you know
understanding.
What, as an aside, there's also one other thing we have that animals don't, and that's the sense of our own mortality. And
that's
along
true.
With that is the desire to leave a legacy and make a difference in life, because we know we're not going to be around together, unlike our dog that really doesn't know that.
Yeah.
And so I think that's another human trait that really we cry out, is to make a legacy or to make a difference where we
mm-hmm.
work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I haven't thought about this much, but I think that that understanding of our mortality is kind of an extension of our capacity to imagine.
Yes.
If you weren't able to imagine, you wouldn't even have a sense of mortality.
No, that's very true. Well, it's a noble objective to nurture both imagination and free will in employees at all organization levels, but how best can a leader coordinate efforts and ensure cooperation and accountability and retain the ultimate control, which obviously a leader must at some point assert and over the operating results? That's the thing I'm always playing around with in my book and otherwise, is that dilemma.
Yeah, so let me talk about control. There's kind of a perception, I think, among some leaders that if they don't maintain command and control, that the organization is going to go helter-skelter and eight ways from Sunday, and they're not going to be able to produce any kind of consistent results. But that actually ignores the fundamental knowledge and sensibility that all people have to want to have and to work within systems that are under control.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that they have to be exerting the control, but they want to be working with systems that are under control.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you, people hate to be told what they love to be asked. Okay?
Yeah, that's right.
Right?
That's right.
And so what we really want to do is create an organization where there is a control system, but it isn't imposed like a commando.
Yeah.
See, it's the command part of command and control that people hate.
Yeah.
Not the control part. People want control. It's really it's kind of important to understand this desire for freedom, again, this free will thing. But inside of an organization, what people want is not freedom to do anything they want. They want freedom from the constraints that keep them from doing their best.
Yeah, that's very true. That if I had been free in that company I told about years ago to come up with my own time and solutions rather than say you will have this and you will do it this way and that way, I probably would still be there.
Now, what needs to be controlling the organization is not people but systems and processes.
Yeah.
Obviously, you need folks who are going to make some interpretation and make final decisions when you're not exactly sure what you ought to do.
Yeah.
But again, let employees have a say in the way that the control system is designed and implemented and operationalized.
Yeah. Along with a franchise, there has to be accountability as well. And
Absolutely. Obviously
any really motivated employee wants to be held accountable in a positive way, not just a negative way. But they want recognition if they do things the right way.
You know, you you could be doing this interview for me, I swear to God, because when most people think about accountability, they think about it has negative connotations, right?
Yeah.
Because they think accountability means, well, you know, my butt is on the line if I screw up.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like to talk about constructive accountability.
Yeah.
And there are lots of ways that people can be held accountable that aren't onerous, that aren't humiliating, but to your point, are the kinds of things that any responsible human being would expect and welcome.
Yeah.
And so you've got to make sure that you have constructive accountability, which means acknowledging both the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And when the bad stuff comes up, you don't have to beat people down and humiliate them. You can just say, look, you know, take a look at the situation. Here's what we said we were going to do.
Yeah.
Here's where we are. Now, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
rather than why are we not here, more what are we going to do about it? I mean, constructively, why are we not here maybe, but not who's to blame for the fact we're not here.
Let me give you a great example of a system that is working in a number of different companies around the world right now that is rooted in the concept of constructive accountability. And The system is called Open Book Management. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Not really.
But it was actually developed by a small company in southwest Missouri called the Springfield Remanufacturing Company. And they came, they were in serious trouble. They had just been, this was in the early 80s, they got spun off by International Harvester. They rebuilt heavy equipment engines. And so they decided that the employees decided they wanted to buy the operation, and they passed the hat around, and all they could come up with was $100,000, and they needed $9 million in order to buy the place. Well, they went, so a little bit short. They went around and started trying to find somebody who'd lend them some money, and they finally found somebody who's crazy enough to do it. I think it was the 50th bank, but they were a bank that specialized in bad loans, and they did it at an 18% interest rate.
Wow.
They basically parked trucks outside because they knew that the minute the company failed to make their interest payment, they were going to strip it down and sell off the pieces. So the guy who ran it, Jack Stack, wrote a wonderful book called The Great Game of Business, decided that he was going to train everybody on every aspect of finance. More importantly, so every single employee understood what a P&L statement was, what a balance sheet was, and what cash flow was, understood all of that, and what the drivers were that led to the success of those numbers.
Then
every single week, here's the accountability piece, Roy.
Yeah.
Every single week, every employee had to show up with their numbers and say, here's how we're doing, and then he would say, what are we going to do next week? And they would say, here's what we're going to do next week. Now, that company actually they became a huge international success. They've been written up in case studies out the wazoo.
Yeah.
And that company now has spun off all kinds of organizations, including a consulting firm called The Great Game of Business that has now worked with 5,000 other companies to institute open book management, which is the quintessence of constructive accountability.
Yes, and with the modern technology, it's possible to give results almost real time to know
absolutely
how you're doing.
Absolutely.
So there's really no reason to withhold details about the company as a whole from the individual employees who are dedicated to the same purpose, hopefully, that the management is.
Absolutely. And, you know, it, not only is there no purpose in it, it's just you're cutting yourself off at the knees.
Yeah. And that avoids what you mentioned. People hate annual performance reviews.
Oh, my God.
Simply because, you know, you're not getting feedback all along on how you're doing. You're not giving constructive criticism. You're just waiting for them to lower the boom, tell you you're not getting a raise or you're on the way out.
mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't think anyone should ever be surprised at an annual performance review if they even have the silly things anymore, because they should.
Well, there are plenty of people who do, and of course, you know, we say, and in this book we say, you know, get away from the term performance appraisal.
Yeah.
I mean, human beings hate to be judged. You know what?
They get defensive, and it's
absolutely
me versus you, and you're telling me what's wrong with me, and I'm defending myself. And not constructive at all.
Yep. And so we say, you know, let's get away from performance appraisal and let's focus on performance development. Now, that doesn't mean that you're all sweet and nice and you don't ever talk about performance problems. But to your point, nobody should ever be surprised. Tell me, here's another question for you. When should an employee be told that there's a problem with their performance?
Right when it's happening.
Right when it's happening.
Yeah.
You don't stack it up and tuck it away and bring it out in the file at the end of the year and say, well, let's count up all the good things and let's count up all the bad things and see where you had most of them. And then we'll decide what kind of a raise you're going to get. And how in the heck are people going to get motivated to really think about development and performance improvement with that kind of a model? It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You need to be focusing in those sessions totally, totally on the improvement of people's performance and from their point of view as well as the point of view of the company. You know, what is it that's going to be mutually gratifying, that's going to be mutually beneficial, that's going to have an equally positive impact on both the employee and the organizations that they work for?
Yeah, I talk about mental vacations for employees where they decide what they really want to do through the rest of their career, and if there's openness and the employees are volunteering to do that, that they tie their individual objectives in with the company's objectives. And I mean, it all sounds more perfect than it is, obviously, because
yeah.
we're not perfect creatures. But that constant emphasis of working together where the individual priorities fit in with the overall priorities is certainly a good objective for anybody to have.
Well, and that goes right to the heart of one other thing that we talk about as key to this whole business of really optimizing the power and purpose of imagination and free will
yeah.
and getting employees engaged, and that's communication.
Yeah,
we're affiliated with a company that does employee surveys, a lot of them, about 300 or 400 a year. And
wow.
one of the things that always shows up as a top three problem is communication, right? Well, and again, we all operate as though communication is sort of a natural thing, like birth and babies. But you know, it's really a science. It's a science and an art.
Yeah.
And you do need to follow some fairly specific kinds of techniques and approaches to organizational communication if you really want to be effective and successful
yeah.
and get employees engaged.
And not that fake executive. And I actually knew an employee of a company, of an insurance company one time that told me that whenever the CEO came around and said, how are you doing or what are you up to, he'd quickly pick up the phone and pretend he was on a conversation
yeah.
so he wouldn't have to talk to the boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, and you know where all of this kind of leads to in the final analysis is one key word, and that's trust.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in an organization where you really have a deep sense of trust, you know, let's say, first of all, what it's like without it. I mean,
yeah.
every single day is a struggle, no matter what else
no,
you got going
horrible,
for you.
Because I've worked for companies like that,
yeah.
that you didn't know where
yeah.
you really stood or
yep.
didn't know what was really going on, and you didn't really trust top management. And
right. Well, when you've got a high level of trust, however, you know, decisions and actions are always, they're bolder, they're faster, there's far less struggle in overcoming obstacles, I mean, that we all face along the way.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the key is, what is it you got to do to foster trust and have an understanding of the why before the how, this basic
yeah.
business about, it, you know, human beings are driven by this need to manifest their capacity for imagination and free
yeah.
will. And then you've got to build on top of that with the right kinds of values to really get people tuned in and turned on to the organization. You've got to have a set of management credibility factors and behaviors
yeah.
that are really key, that are openness and honesty and responsiveness and reliability and all of that. But here's where most people fail, and that is that they are looking at, they're designing the systems, policies, and processes in five key areas in a very wrong-headed fashion. And they are measurement, rewards and recognition,
yeah.
communication, learning and development, and continuous improvement.
Yeah.
People have systems in those five categories in just about every organization. But A, they're typically not very well designed,
yeah.
and B, they don't tell employees, you're number one, you are first.
Yeah.
And until you get those things together, the values, the management credibility factors, and the right kinds of people, first systems, policies, and processes, you will never have that furnace of trust that's going to burn in the hearts and souls of the employees to create engagement and to build that connection with the marketplace.
Yeah,
it's like the woman you ran into when you were looking at that property.
Always remember that, because she was so different from most real estate agents. You know, when you go into a
yeah.
model home, they're all there for you. But
right,
you know, what if you're of middle age? Let's look at the other side. We've been talking about leaders. What if I'm of middle age and I've worked for my present employer for a number of years, but I'm frustrated as hell because I see some better ways of doing things.
Yeah.
But every time I approach my boss, he or she doesn't seem to have any interest at all.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to go around my boss to the big boss because then I'll get in trouble, and I don't really want
yeah.
to quit because I've got a number of years. How do I try to stimulate and get the discussion going to get my change before people that can do something about it?
So this is a tough one. and I don't have a real good answer for you. That's why I really focus most of my efforts and the rest of the folks on our team focus on what is it that management needs to do in order to create the conditions that really allow people to thrive. Because if you're in a box, Roy, if you're in a box and you got your arms tied behind your back, man, it's really hard. It's hard to do the work and it's hard to be motivated. But let's just say that, you know, whoever you're talking about has a boss that maybe isn't most responsive in the world. Still, the one thing that you can always do is spend some time with that boss, and it takes a little bit of courage. You know what? Is to spend some time with the boss and say, look, I really want to do whatever I can to help all of us succeed here, and I want to go beyond just doing my day-to-day job.
Yeah.
I'm glad to do my job. I want to do it well, but I want to go beyond that. And before I decide what I'm going to do to go beyond that, I want to find out what you need to have done in this team, on this team, that isn't getting done right now. What is it that you need to get done that isn't getting done? And then let me and some of the other people on this team work with you on a regular basis. Get together every week or so. Let's talk about how we can get done what you need to get done.
Yeah, that's that concept of continuous improvement you talk about, little stages.
That's
all
exactly right. And you know what? It takes guts to do that.
Yeah, it does.
It
take
just takes
to do it in terms of to your boss's advantage, not just to your own.
That's
correct. You're not trying to grab power because that's going to backfire. And
absolutely.
It also has to benefit other people in your department, so it's not you that benefits. But
absolutely. You really have been thinking about this stuff quite a bit yourself.
Well,
this
I wrote a book a couple of years ago about it. So it's probably not, you know, not exactly like yours, but it has some of the same points. But definitely, I think your business fable sounds like something that, and I love fables. I love, I've read several books that instead of just telling you what to do, tell a story, and that makes it much more attractive. And how can somebody obtain your book?
Well, the easiest way is just to go onto our website. But if you can't remember the email address, you can go to barnesandnoble.com or you can go to amazon.com. But
yeah,
if you
I know
go
I
to our,
it up there. But,
yeah. Yeah, and so the website address is www.landesassociates.com. That's L-A-N-D-E-S, associates.com. But again, if you go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, they've got the book there.
Yeah.
And it'll be,
But if they also want to contact you as a possible consultant or a speaker, they can go to that LandisAssociates.com website.
Absolutely.
Well, I certainly appreciate you joining us today. This topic is so complex and full that we could take about another 3 hours and still just barely touch the surface. But I
probably 3 days.
Yeah, that's true. But of course, you go out and consult with clients and go really into depth on that. So but we certainly appreciate you joining us, and tune in again next week, and we'll offer more ideas on recharging your business in the new year. And thank you so much for Les for joining us today.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Well, in closing our program today, I want to introduce you to a website right in line with the topic we discussed in our last three programs, and that's Planning for Retirement. The site address is www.babyboomers-retiring.com, and this site is packed full of information for anyone contemplating retirement within the next 5 years. Its founder, architect, and principal contributor, Patricia Price, is with us today. And in her prior life, she was a training and development manager for a large corporation. And get this, she organized and presented pre-retirement courses for employees 2 to 3 years before their retirement age. And that sounds like something every company should do. But best of all, it included 5 days away from the office at a seaside resort. Sorry we can't offer this retreat today, but Patricia will tell you about her site and you can receive similar retirement advice from the comfort of your home. Hooray. Hello, Pat, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello, Roy. Nice to be with you.
Well, tell us about your personal story and what inspired you to start your website and why you're uniquely qualified to help others in their retirement planning.
Well, initially, I started this site simply for my own benefit, really, because I've been caring for my mother for 6 years. She had Alzheimer's dementia. And after she died, I was just totally lost and needed a project.
Yeah.
And I suppose because I've always been in training and development, that to me was, I've got to learn something new. So I started messing about on the internet and came across a program of how to build a website and signed up for that. And then I thought, right, where can I start? And obviously all the information that I had on retirement seemed to be the best place.
Yes, it's, and your website is a veritable fountain of information for us, anyone planning retirement. And tell us about some of the subsections and features that you have.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to do was to make the website interactive.
Yeah.
Because I think it's all very well talking about my own experiences, but everyone has different experience that they can add into the pot.
Yeah.
And so there are various places on the website that you can go to and write about your own experience.
Oh,
for instance, if you're a carer, there's a section on caring, what kind of retirement lifestyle you're expecting to have, what are your dreams or your challenges, what kind of retirement property would you like to live in or do you live in. People are often talking about moving abroad to do something totally new when they retire, so it would be lovely to hear from people that have done that and
yeah.
whether they have made the right decision for them or whether they regretted it. And then there's another section on tell us about your best vacation.
Yeah.
Have you, you know, been on an absolute dream holiday or was it just an ordinary holiday that turned into something exceptional?
Yeah.
So we're getting lots of input from other visitors to the website.
Yeah, it's just loaded. I was very interested on your homepage. You've got an article, Does Your Dream for Retirement Match the Reality Check? And I think that's so key. People need to put together their finances and where they stand on those with what they really want to do in retirement, because one without the other does not accomplish very much.
Well, that's right. And, of course, our generation really have been hit very badly by the global economy crisis.
Yeah.
You know, our savings have not earning any interest. We've lost equity on houses. Our pensions probably
not
haven't.
Not to mention stocks.
Well, exactly.
In
nothing seems to have performed as we were expecting it to. And so whatever plans we had sort of 20 years ago, we might have to completely rethink them as we actually go into retirement.
Yeah, and you offer
But I think
free,
what a one... Sorry?
I just wanted to mention you offer a free newsletter also, and how can someone subscribe to that?
Simply by filling in their name and email address. On each page there's a little box in the right hand column. That's all they need to do, and
yeah.
the newsletter goes out monthly with relevant topics that have been in the local press and on the internet that you may have missed.
Yeah, that's looks like a wealth of information. It's just a best of all the information on Pat's website is free, but you do offer a number of product links. Tell us a little bit about some of the products that you know, people may have interest in that's on your website.
Well, I was very surprised because, as you probably know, my website was initially started for people in the UK.
Yeah.
But actually, as it's turned out, I get a lot of my traffic from America. And I was contacted not very long ago by a company that are offering a Medicare power planner. And that's to help you identify all the different kinds of Medicare.
That's
something that I don't quite understand, because obviously we have the National Health in the UK, but yeah. I understand in America you have to pay for all your medical care, don't you?
Yeah, up until retirement, then you have to pay some Medicare premium, supplemental Medicare and all that. Believe me, it's
That's
confusing
right.
to us here, too.
Yeah.
And you also have
yeah.
a lot of information about vacation sites. Of course, a lot of that's for people in the UK, but you offer and the theater and
yeah.
dinner deals and ladies' clothing, I noticed, was in there. There's all kinds of interesting links. That it's just a real potpourri of information that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to find things that are more relevant to other countries now, because I realize that I can't just concentrate on the UK. So, you know, hopefully I'll be able to offer more in the way of holidays and dinner and theatre,
yeah.
perhaps for other countries.
Or we'll be glad to go to London for dinner and theatre.
Yes,
get a deal
that
there.
Would be
of course,
great.
You probably the dinner deals don't probably include the airfare.
No, I don't think so, no.
Well, give us your website address once again so we can everyone can find it.
It's www.babyboomers-retiring.com.
Yeah, don't forget that dash between boomers and retiring, because you
That's
won't get
right.
to the right place without it.
Yes, yes.
Well, it's certainly a website I would recommend anyone look at if they're contemplating retirement, or even if they're already retired. There's no reason you can't go to it and get some ideas for vacations and other things. And thank you so much, Pat, for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed talking to you, Roy. Thank you.
And folks, that's a wrap for this week, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.